Space, the final frontier. Space Station Ashlyn sits on the edge of Federation space with its companion ship, the USS Delamis Christian. The space around them is full of mystery and strange wonders, where secrets are kept and danger lurks around every corner. The crew of the Delamis Christian must navigate treacherous waters as they work to protect the Federation. But as they peer into the unknown, they will discover that the line between friend and foe is not always clear. They will be tested like never before, and will face challenges that will push them to their limits. Join us on this adventure as we explore the farthest reaches of space and uncover the hidden truths that lie within the shadows. Tabletop Journeys presents Star Trek: Preservations.
We open up as the captain and the XO reach the bridge, take their respective stations, and the floor is yours, Captain.
So, Mr. Stavin, what kind of geological disaster are we looking at, or will we not know until we get an opportunity to interface with the buoy?
Fortunately, it is something that is very well telegraphed, and we've actually always had access to that information. Again, general chatter and radio transmissions and communications similar to what on Earth you once referred to as the interwebs is something that just goes off into space, and our systems collect that as background noise and don't do much with it. With the given instructions I was provided, I collected and had the computer systems correlate all data to provide better context to what we were hearing. As such, the nation known as Voltaine is a nation that prides itself on its ability to produce energy in a sustainable way. It seems their planet has been hurtling towards geologic and environmental devastation for quite some time. A lot of political wrangling on how to address that. But this particular nation state has determined that utilizing the planet's geothermic energy to be a good way to do so. Quite logical methodology, if I do say so. Unfortunately, they have fallen prey to the evils of politics. And what is that Earther phrase? When you allow the lowest bidder, things have not gone well to the point where they have cut corners, used substandard equipment, and they are about to unleash a massive volcanic eruption somewhere near the poles of their planet. Unfortunately, this is fairly close to where our target ship came to rest. Our target ship was buried in ice. The reason why the signal started somewhat recently is because enough of the ice has melted in that area so as to allow the signal to escape. In effect, they are about to have a devastating geologic incident. The other nation state is an entirely militarized nation state. They, however, actually go by the title of the Rhetoric Defense Force. Those of the RDF, as they frequently refer to themselves, are the ones who have developed the extreme success with their satellite network. They're an exceptionally paranoid group of individuals that basically see shadows and demons and threats around every corner. They have seen the uptick in geologic activity, and they are convinced, based on their communications amongst their government and their military commanders, that it is a preliminary action to a military assault on their nation. They are currently and clandestinely mobilizing a nuclear response. If they are successful in adding a nuclear response to this tremendously devastating geologic event, they could create a cascade effect of extinction level capacity. Further, it will not be significantly longer, maybe 2 to 3 hours after we reach system before our ship is fully exposed and able to be seen by the general trajectory of their satellite passings. They will know it's there, and they will know it's alien in very short order. Their scans, once the ship is fully exposed, are capable of determining whether or not there's human life on that ship or biological essences in the event that there is no living beings on the ship. They're going to kill themselves, sir, and they're going to do it because our technology is scaring one of them to a response.
That is an interesting analysis, Mr. Stavin. Thank you.
Of course, sir. Their chair swivels back, and they continue their monitoring of chatter.
I take the download pad with all this information and senior staff to the briefing room, or to my ready room, actually.
Everybody assembles in the ready room?
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have some new information that we're getting from monitoring their communications network. And Lee, was Stavin able to dig out? I thought it was the geological instability that's causing the nation of Radic to be all like paranoid and possibly nuking.
So the geologic activity got them to pay more attention. The signal they got, the Voltaine don't know about the signal. When Radic got the signal, they assumed that Voltaine is causing the geologic incident to be a first strike weapon against them. So now they are preparing to go to a nuclear option to preemptively strike Voltaine because they caught a signal. Not that they figured out what it was. They just caught a signal coming from an area nearby where the geologic incident is and where the geologic site that's doing that work is. And so they assumed it's them. And so they're like, they're getting ready to kill us. And they're going to make it look to their people like it's a natural event. Screw that. We're going to do this.
And does this
DC has the ability to know that that geologic event, preventable, if they had stopped years ago, that coupled with a nuclear strike of that facility will create an extinction level event.
Now, does this Voltaine nation, does it have its own nuclear arsenal with mutual assured destruction?
It does. And so once nukes from one side go up, nukes from the other side will go up. The nukes from the first side will hit the geologic event, expanding it exponentially. So the quasi-natural destruction and on top of the nuclear destruction followed by the secondary nuclear destruction is why it's going to cascade into massive destruction. And then you have all the fallout of nuclear winter ad infinitum.
So this geological event, are we talking like a Yellowstone size eruption?
Yes, except it's at the polar ice cap. Mm-hmm. It will be the evaporation, the melting of all polar ice and everything that goes along with that. It's basically like spitting up the magma core of the planet through the polar cap and then nuking all that material as it explodes into the atmosphere.
So this would still be a catastrophic environmental calamity if the geological eruption just happens on its own, right?
Anything and everything within 20 miles of any coast is done just off of the geologic thing, and there could be other secondary effects as well. But they would definitely just eliminate 20 plus miles of coastline, planet-wide. It's going to be bad no matter what. The question is, would it eliminate the species on planet?
Coupled with the fact that this ship has obviously been here long enough to be hidden and melted in the polar ice cap. I'm workshopping this out loud, ladies and gentlemen, but a true strict reading of the Prime Directive says we do nothing. The fact that the ship has been here for this long undetected until right now is a outside event. It is being caused actively by the Federation. It's not being caused by an alien force. It is bad luck and bad timing, and these are how species level evolutionary events can sometimes happen, in the positive and the negative, right? Lord knows if that Vulcan shuttle had been flying by when Zefren Cochran flew his ship out there, the Andorians might have found Earth first, or we might not have discovered Earth for another 15, 20 years. Lord knows what would have happened then. So I go around the table, Mr. Ocean, knowing what we know, what do you think?
In addition to the fact that I agree with you on the strict reading of the Prime Directive, there's also two other factors that we have to consider, both pro and con for violating that. There's the ramifications of what happens if this species survives and becomes warp capable. They learn that this event was caused by one of our ships.
I think history would judge the RDF to be responsible for it, but and Lee,
that's
just real quick, on the signal thing,
the other piece.
Did they know it was alien of origin, or did they just see a signal beamed into space?
They see a signal that is escaping. They don't know where it was going specifically, but they did record said signal, and they are transmitting all the data they know about the signal, which means out in the galaxy, outside of the Federation, other people will have the information that an old Federation ship was on the planet at this time. So to Ocean's point, 100 years from now or 1,000 years from now, if any of these people survive, they could potentially find out that the Federation was, if not responsible, at least part of the equation.
The flip side of that is that this RDF is exactly the reason why the Prime Directive exists. If they are given reason to believe or reason to reclaim the ship, it's highly unlikely that its technology would not be used for warlike purposes.
From what I'm reading from the scans and these plans, after they unleash their nuclear arsenal, there won't be any evidence of a Federation ship for any survivors to uncover after the wreckage.
The second point was to clarify that there is a danger beyond the obvious in violating the directive here, if that was even being considered.
True, but again, like as we all studied in grade school, if not for Earth's Third World War, would the survivors not have been open to peaceful contact from an alien race? It's very hard to tease out these sociological questions. Lieutenant Nealon, you look like you have something to say.
I don't think that it's, aside from the protocol, I don't think it's right for us to turn around and not get involved only because we see that they're going to be destroyed. I think now that we know, we can't unknow that knowledge. And we're implicit in their destruction if we don't
take care
of our involvement.
Sorry.
That is an interesting interpretation.
Rilla looks a little sheepish.
Mr. Tenari, you're pretty quiet.
Primarily thinking over logistics, but it seems like in Federation history, Prime Directive has been kept more in its breach than its keeping. Most of the Federation's great captains have broken the Prime Directive in situations such as this in name of the greater good. But this is your decision, not ours. Any fallout for this will fall on your head.
And history only writes about the times where it works out. We conveniently forget the times it doesn't.
Logistically, for obvious reasons, even if we decide to go down and do something for the ship, it's obvious if it's that close to the geologic event, we can't blow it up for fear of setting something off.
Indeed. And I don't see an answer that stops this RDF from nuking the site short of us establishing communication and contacting them. Because the signals stop now, but they're still prepping for a strike. I don't know what could convince them.
Well,
and I don't know if we can.
What if we were to create another disaster? A smaller disaster.
They're paranoid enough to think that this is a military strike when it is obviously a horrific act of capitalism. Doesn't make me very inclined to think that they would respond logically and rationally to something.
No.
Yes, Lieutenant Nilon, can you get down to science and see if there's even a way we could stop the geologic eruption from occurring, even if it is or isn't ethical to do so? Let's figure out if we could even intervene if we wanted to before deciding whether or not intervention is the ethical maneuver here.
I'll go right away and start working on it.
Sir, there have been times the Prime Directive had been kept by simply contacting the world leaders and leaving the rest of the population in ignorance.
Who would be the world leader in this case?
Again, this is short of contacting the RDF and revealing the existence of extra solar life, and that we come in a big giant ship full of weapons, photon torpedoes and energy phasers that could scour the life off of the surface of any planet, but we come in peace. I don't think we'll really play well into their paranoia.
What if we took another approach of an intervention? What if we were to somehow initiate a conversation? When I mentioned a small disaster, something that happens near the event, where they're working, their outpost, something happens that I don't want to say the place blows up. That seems a little dark, but something that would cause everybody pause. Set it up so that the RDF believes that whatever they were doing failed. In all likelihood, they would demand answers from the Voltaine since the immediate threat is gone.
But as far as I can tell from the data that Staven has collected, this RDF has like a satellite parked in orbit looking down at this geological site that's in the current process of melting down and preparing for a gigantic explosion.
It's en route. It will be in position in the time frame that was previously stated. It is not there yet. So if something happened before it was in position, they would not be able to strike until that satellite was in position.
So why don't we hit it with something else? I hate to suggest attacking the planet.
Then
but
don't.
What if we drop something that is shielded to get its way through orbit, but to destroy itself on impact? We drop it right near the installation.
I still don't understand the logic. Like, how is that going to keep this paranoid militarized nation that's about to annihilate their planet.
They're doing so in fear.
Which means nothing logical will reason them out of it. I mean, it'd be wrong, but...
At this point, you're in your ready room. You get a message from Stavin. Pardon the interruption, sir. We may have a complication to our deliberations. For those in the audience and those watching me, I am spending 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 threat. Not enough for a scene reversal, so you're lucky. Got away. Didn't get quite enough for a scene reversal. But Stavin continues. We were successful in shutting down the automated signal. However, what we did not anticipate was that the automated signal had done its job prior to being shut down.
Which was?
There are attempts from a Colonel Thaddeus Hawks of the Makos, leader of the platoon in question, is transmitting on all frequencies. They are, however, coded, which should reflect as gibberish, unless they are able to decode it. Essentially, he is reporting that his unit is waking up from their makeshift cryo sleep, and they are trying to determine where they are. They have also transmitted mission logs leading up to this point from their perspective. I am sending those mission logs to you now, sir.
Wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Stavin.
Of course, sir. Oh, and Khan has reported we are approximately a few minutes from our orbit outside the system.
Very good. Have Mr. Arvik take us out of warp and proceed to the buoy location and establish a communication link and download all relevant data.
Of course, sir. And I will transmit that to you without interruption as soon as it is available.
Very good.
The captain and the staff has access to the communication and the colonel's logs. A cursory summary, which the ship's computer is able to produce for you, sums up this basic information. Anything else, you might have to take some time to look into, perhaps even make challenge rolls to get better or more detail. But essentially, they were patrolling the border of Romulan space alongside an additional coalition ship, Andorian nature, and an additional Earth ship. When they were beset and attacked, the Andorian ship was destroyed almost immediately. The attacking ships decloaked. They were Romulans. This was a Romulan first strike incident. This would have preceded the Earth-Romulan War by probably 8 to 10 months, maybe even a year. These were early forays. This was a group that actually ended up in an area that the Romulans were sneaking into. And the Romulans went after them with the thought that they'd destroy them completely and nobody would know what happened. But something odd happened. Basically, the Starfleet ship shielded the Makos, knowing that they were critically injured and their ship was not going to make it through this. And they basically shielded and allowed the Mako ship to ride behind them at the Romulan attackers. They basically rammed one of the Romulan ships that had been damaged by the Andorian ship, destroying that, and the Mako ship went after the other Romulan ship from there. The Romulan ship, seeing the destruction of the one ship and the possibility of being found out, immediately went into warp. However, the Mako ship was inside of its warp bubble when it did so. The combination of events spun the Mako ship out in a weird way, in a weird system. So they lost track of that Romulan ship. They were not able to right the ship. They had very limited Starfleet personnel piloting their ship, and their own personnel were not adequate pilots to correct the issue. And effectively, they got sucked into the aperture of a wormhole. They got spit out in a place that they had no idea, no ability to chart, no idea where they were. They had, because they were basically extra capacity for additional equipment, basically the ability to set up a set of cryo beds, and they had a setup to wake them up every 10 years to see if they could try to make contact. And sometime after that, they didn't wake up. Basically, they had a complication when setting up their wake-up bell. So they never woke up, and they drifted in space. And at some point, shortly thereafter, crashed into this planet and basically got buried over time when this planet did not have all their sensory and all their technology, and people didn't notice that type of thing. And they'd been there all along, and the alarm bell just finally went off recently. And so now you have a platoon of Makos waking up on a planet that they don't understand, roughly 40 personnel and probably 4 or 5 Starfleet personnel that are on planet, actively communicating to try to figure out where they are. And they have a ship that has no warp capability, but it does have impulse thrusters. And basically the report out is, we are attempting to get our ship ready to leave this planet. Now you have personnel in jeopardy and a prime directive situation.
I see. That changes some of the calculations. Mr. Tenari, do you think you could get a tight beam communication to the colonel without being detected by the RDF sensor net?
We can certainly give it a shot. I can certainly make sure that even if they do detect it, they won't know what we say.
I'm not worried about them finding out what we said. We're concerned about them detecting that our existence.
Let me get the team working on it.
From a mechanical standpoint, Dave, we're going to do your role for that right now. That okay. way we have that answer. It would be done by the time you park and do your handshake. So if you're successful, it'll be ready when you get there.
Gotcha.
Any complications that arise will basically extend that time frame. I'm going to do something similar to the way STA handles conflict as far as the time frame. So it's going to be a complication of 3. If you hit the third complication range, it's going to extend your time frame from soon to moderate to quite a while. So it'll be on the long end of things. It'll be deep into the issue before it works. If you hit the 2 range, then it'll be a moderate time frame. And soon, it won't be ready right away when you get there, but not very long after. Just to put that out there, as opposed to putting specific time frames on it. But that's what the complications would equate to. That's where basically, you are.
So basically, Tenari gets up immediately and heads to engineering. All right. Excellent.
I will say that the difficulty for this is going to be a 3, because their network is difficult. That is inclusive of the negative trait that we created with a previous complication, though.
So, all right.
With your team, it would be reduced by 1, so you're looking at a 2.
2. All right. So I'm going to assume, since I'm under pressure, this will be daring engineering.
Fair enough.
And also, because we're doing this off the cuff, that my improvisation focus will count.
Absolutely.
All right. What are we standing in terms of threat and momentum?
I have 0 threat in my basket. You have 3 momentum.
All right. Since we need to get this done, I will spend 1 threat and 2 momentum for 2 extra dice.
Ooh, yeah. And that's what I'm talking about.
With procedural compliance, I will drop 1 of those dice for an automatic success.
Okay.
So my target number is 15. All right. A 3, an 8, and an 18.
2.
However, because of bold engineering, I will reroll the 18. And by the way, the 3 is a critical.
Okay.
That's so far 4 successes.
All right.
And a 16, so that's not a success, but it's not a complication.
Excellent. So the way I'm looking at that, because you drop that down to a 2 with 4 successes, it gives you 2 momentum. Is that correct?
Plus I have a bonus momentum for intents.
Yep. So that's 3 total momentum that you have.
One of which I have to spend immediately.
One of which you have to spend, and 2 of which you can spend if you would like to.
So the intents one, since it fits so well with intents, I would like to spend it to reduce the time necessary. So that's a second edition option.
Okay. And is that for a 1-point spend?
That's a 1-point spend, I believe, yes.
Excellent.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Joe.
Yep.
Do we want to get a ship assist?
We should probably do that. If you want to tell us the target number, and Lacey, I'll let you roll for the DC.
Just 1 die?
Yep.
Joe, what's the target number?
What skill are we using?
It would be comms engineering, I think.
11.
11.
Rolled an 8.
Okay.
That's an extra.
So that's it. So there's total of 4 momentum. You spent 1, so we're down to 3 momentum. Any other immediate spends? Or are we banking it?
Let's bank it. I think we're going to need all the momentum we can get for a planetary disaster.
One might think. Okay. You're 100% confident in your ability to produce a tight beam communication. Is that a message you're crafting, or you're letting the CO craft that message?
Oh, I'm letting the CO craft it.
Okay, CO, you're on the mic.
Colonel Hawk, this is Captain Tobor of the USS Delarmus Christian. Please cease all radio communications. There are a hostile enemy in your area. Do not respond. We're coming for you.
That is a tight beam communication. I'm going to ask Tanari, because you were so successful, even though you did choose to bank that, nobody had mentioned it, I will let you do the momentum spend to make sure it's coded in a way that Hawk would recognize that as a valid communication and not a foreign entity trying to trick him.
I will gladly spend that momentum.
Excellent. You have 2 momentum. I have 1 threat. The communication goes out. There is 2 squelch, which is indicative of the time frame of a yes. And for those in the audience who may not know what squelch is, that's when you push the button on a walkie-talkie or radio device and it creates that quack, quack kind of sound. Just for those who may not know that.
Yeah. I turn to Ocean. Like, that seems to be one issue. There are too many Starfleet personnel on the ground for a runabout. We'd have to send both, pretty much our entire shuttle complement, and then at that point we might as well just send in the Christian, at which point we might as well just call the RDF and tell them, stand down. Or maybe we could have Mr. Tanari direct one of our passive probes to ram into that satellite, and then requiring them to take another amount of time to maneuver a secondary one into position, buying us a few more hours. That's a possibility.
Sir, are you up for another one of my weird out-of-the-box solutions?
Right now, it's just Ocean and I. You're in engineering, right?
Oh, sorry.
I assume you're communicating over badge, but yeah.
No, we were private XO CO.
Oh, okay.
We're about to decide whether or not to violate the Prime Directive, and if so, how badly.
Ocean has been quietly considering looking at the limited intelligence that we have on the various data pads and screens that we have in front of us. We should have contacted Starfleet as soon as we realized what was happening and that we were being forced into a potential Prime Directive issue. That being said, we need to buy more time. We need to figure out some way to slow down the RCP.
That was why I was saying have Tanari dead strike their satellite with our stealth probe. Make it look like a micrometeor strike. It'll be suspicious as hell for them, as paranoid as they are. But from everything Mr. Staven has pulled from the communication network, they're maneuvering that satellite in position in order to make sure that they can conduct this first strike.
The convenience factor of that would be something that I would suspect as being part of the first strike.
Or they might write it off as a counter. This Voltaine nation, it has to have its own sufficient military capability to stave off such a militarized rival nation.
You're not wrong.
It's conceivable that they know that the satellite's coming and that they have their own counter systems in place because they're now trying to fly the satellite over, quote unquote, their territory.
Specifically to that point, there is information that's there, and having made that statement, it would be very easy, no roles necessary, to ascertain that a lot of the extraplanetary exploration is the Voltaine nation versus the RDF. Because the RDF has been focused very much on military and watching other people, they have not put a lot of their resources into resource gathering and going external to the planet, things like that nature. So seeing a satellite maneuver would definitely elicit some form of response. So while they might think it is the other folks, here's the other challenge. The way their system is set up, they cannot strike without their satellite being in place. While they have nuke capabilities, they are not dumb nukes. They are entirely dependent on satellite positioning to use their weapons effectively.
So if we take out the one that's 2 hours out, how far do we think it would take them to maneuver another one in a position?
There's enough satellites where that would be really hard to ascertain, but you would know once they start moving them. Assume it would not be less than a six-hour time frame, but it could be anywhere from 6 to 24 hours.
Right. Better than nothing. And at least when Lieutenant Nilon reports back on the analysis, once we get the data from the handshake, if the geothermal plant erupts before that time, then it's just a catastrophic event that is outside of the prime directive, because unfortunately they've done it to themselves.
Is there any way we can trigger it early? If it's going to happen.
Man, you have ice water running through your veins, Ocean. But yeah, we can look at that.
I don't like this any more than you do, but
I think it's the only way.
Yeah. How many Makos are we talking about? Do they give
a platoon of 40?
Approximately 40. You don't know how many survived versus not survived, but assume a platoon around 40. Assume there's probably a crew of anywhere from 6 to 12 Starfleet personnel, and those 6 to 12 may even be considered amongst the 40. So,
all right. So if we're talking about 40 people, how many could we theoretically beam into one of the runabouts?
Six.
You could get six at any one time. You can stack them like cordwood in a runabout. 50 people, probably 3 to 4 runabouts. You could probably get them all. It'd be exceptionally tight. It wouldn't be the best situation. A fourth runabout, you could probably easily get them all at once. But again, in order to have transporter technology, warp engines have to be online. So there's a lost leader kind of thing. If you're going in to pick them up by transporter, the captain's original comment is they're going to see warp signatures. We send in six. That's a flight of ships. That's an attack wing, right? Versus one thing that just beams them pretty much. You could hit all your transporters at once, and you can pretty much grab all of them.
Well, I'm wondering if we can grab them a packet at a time.
Yeah.
There's not going to be enough time for that flight.
Yep.
Not with warp, not without even impulse engines they could likely detect at that shorter range.
Yep.
Maneuvering extra atmospheric. Who is our best cybersecurity person, Mr. Ocean? Hopefully they have a fascination for antique communication systems. Would also help.
That would likely be Crewman Wankum.
Security?
Yep.
Yep.
Wankum.
I would also say that your newest temporary Zindi security officer also did his fourth year cadet thesis paper on communications, coding operations, and security threats during the Earth-Zindi War.
Excellent. Have Mr. Agdo, Mr. Warren Kern, or Ensign Stavin, and yeah, that's who I want. Let's bring them up to the conference room. I'm gonna brainstorm. I still think we have to attack their data net and hide. If we can't avoid their sensors, we have to make the sensors think we're something else. Like I remember in those old spy movie hollow novels that my dad used to like, you put the mirror in the beam and it bounces back, not and letting you be able to sneak past the line of sight. So if we can't avoid being seen, then we tell the computers, their computers,
what they're seeing.
Nothing to see here.
All right, your personnel arrive.
So you lay out the plan. Mr. Stavin, this is Ensign Agdo. He did, apparently, you did a communications stint, a thesis paper. Commander Chizilra and myself have been gaming out the theory, and we have been playing around with their communication protocols such that we feel that we're have an extremely confident ability to hack their sensors and essentially have their systems report that they're seeing nothing where the Dilemma's Christian is. Then all we have to do is worry about optical detection, which we can do through the light scattering shield algorithms developed fairly early on, and maneuver in system as retrieve our stranded personnel, remove what evidence we can, and hopefully prevent a global nuclear holocaust.
Stavin says, "Sir, I am exceptionally confident in my ability to properly transmit whatever signals and information you deem are necessary to input. And my study of the RDF's communications in conjunction with the Voltaine communications, I should be able to achieve a high degree of accuracy with their own syntax, allowing either side to believe that any information you wish disseminated was created by the other side. I will immediately begin work on a program protocol that will allow our ship's computer to translate anything you say into the type of syntax you need either side to receive."
Excellent.
Agdo says, "With my knowledge of the coding and the way that it works, it should be fairly easy to make one side feel it's a code created by the other side so that they think they're decoding messages from each other.
Mr.
Again,
Agdo,
the only difficulty would be determining what you want them to say.
What if we use the RDF's own paranoia against it and make us look like a disinformation, blatantly, obviously fabricated propaganda disinformation from the Voltaine, but do it in a way that's ugly and obviously not real? We are computer-generated imagery, because obviously alien life doesn't exist."
"Sir, are you suggesting that we mask the platoon's coded signals as though they were deep fakes from a rogue news agency in the Voltaine Society?"
"No, I'm saying we mask the existence of the Dilemma's Christian flying into orbit as a deep fake from their military national news agency.
Creating a situation where the RDF's people would think that their government is lying to them and hold them accountable for differences, challenges?"
"Well, if we can get them to believe that we're fake, then this geological first strike weapon is also fake. And that this is just a deep state propaganda to strike on the Voltaine.
I suspect that could work, sir, and I dare definitely stand by my original statement. I can certainly create the coding to allow that to happen. I do have to issue my concern with creating a situation that could potentially destabilize a government, sir. Seems, especially a militarized government, a little outside the bounds of what I had expected to do on a temporary assignment to a shore leave.
I completely understand. I was on ready for shore leave and then flew into this doomsday scenario here. And I think anything short of an extinction-level event wiping off all life on this planet is desirable. Of course, my first desire would be for us to just simply be invisible to their sensors and hack them and have essentially record a whole bunch of space that's all good and then put it into like replay so that their sensors are seeing nothing as we fly in and do our thing. That'd be a pretty sophisticated virus, I know.
Yeah, first class Wenkum, she speaks up. And for those who do not know, she's a Tellarite, and she says, we could, of course, do that. It'd be a temporary fix, and then whatever they're left with, they'd have to work out. I don't think there's any way to fool them long term. They're beyond the technology where they would simply accept something like this without looking for it. But for a trill idea, it's not the worst I've heard, sir.
I'm glad my several hundred years of experience was able to help. Do you have a better idea, crewman?
No, I'm perfectly okay with going ahead with the trill idea. I signed on to be on the ship. Happy to. I just impressed.
Glad I was able to impress you. And I think if we can get out of this situation, remove our people, remove whatever we can on the ship, they might figure something happened to the sensors, but if they're not able to prove it beyond showing wreckage and dead alien bodies, they probably will go back to pointing guns at each other fairly quickly.
Oh, yeah. They're pretty human-like in that regard.
Indeed. So, once you get the download from the buoy, go ahead and give me a time estimate how long it'll take you to get this sensor blackout virus built and injected into their thing, into their network. And if we have to brute force crash it, then that's what we do. I'd prefer the record and playback of nothing's wrong, but we're running out of time.
So all of that because you're dealing with inferior technology to a significant margin is easy enough to do. The only thing you're rolling for at this point is for complications. So in that regard, you have the personnel who has the skill. I would say in this particular point in time, they have the focuses necessary. So the ship would definitely assist.
And I'm essentially using the direct task to command them and get the assist for the task.
Yeah. Let's see. We're going to go with the cybersecurity, and they're going to roll. And let's see. I don't have a character sheet for them, so we're going to use the standard security officer for them to start with. Does anybody have that target number on hand?
So we've got a notable crew, so it is 10 plus 4, 14 is the target number of this is their jelly jam stat.
Okay, excellent. So in this case, 14 is the target. Rolling two dice.
Ooh, that's a bad roll.
I was going to say, hopefully that's a good roll.
No.
Oh,
not a complication, but it is not a good roll. At this point, they do not have determination. He's unsuccessful in doing it. It will be done. It will be done with complication. That complication is there's several glitches within the ability to do what you've asked. It'll work. Face value, it will fool common people. It'll fool semi-educated people. But anybody who is in this field high-ranking military folks, high-level security folks, they're going to know that something came in and came out, is what we're basically looking at.
So they got zero successes?
So oh, yeah, I rolled a 16 and an 18.
Okay.
Like, famously bad. Not Tanari bad, but famously bad. Love you, Dave. And for the record, if I did Tanari bad, they would absolutely have gotten at least one success in addition to the bad. That's why it was not Tanari bad, because there's no silver lining on it.
Tanari bad is like a success with like two or three 20s.
Yeah, exactly. As far as the coding piece, also in that Jelly Gem stat sweet zone, I am actually not rolling those same two dice because clearly they have issues. Does the crew wish to expend anything to help this ensign get an extra die?
Yeah, we'll spend a momentum.
All right. We'll get a third die here. And we have a critical success. We have a second critical success. And we have a third success. So we have 2, 3, 4 successes.
Plus my 2 successes on my critical assist.
Okay. So we now have at least one for an immediate spend available. And Adam, or actually, I'm sorry, Dave, would you roll for the ship, please?
All right.
I would say computer security. Yeah.
4.
The ship's security is a 4, so that's a critical success.
So that's 2 more. So you have 3 for the immediate spend and 5 for the bank.
Tanari bad my antenna.
That's awesome.
You weren't rolling for Tanari. You were rolling for the ship. So we've got 9 total right now, right? 3 immediate, 5 yep. to bank, 1 left over.
Yep.
How much of
I've
that?
I've got eight rather. 3 okay. immediate, 5 to bank. Is
right.
I'm
Plus saying. We have 1, right?
Yeah. And you have 1.
So we've got we have 9, 8 are here. Okay.
Yep.
So Lee, how much momentum, how potent of a trait do we need to make it to have it all work?
I would say you need at least 2 to eliminate the previous complication that was success with complication. You would need at least 2 more to make this piece work perfectly. And then 2 more beyond that to make the third piece work perfectly.
All right. 6.
So that'd be a total of 6, leaving you with 3 momentum, me with 1 threat.
Yeah, so with that 6 and the potent 3 advantage that Ocean and I created earlier, we're going to wrap that all in to the we can get in and out without them having enough evidence to say, look, there's life outside our solar system.
Okay. I'll let you get in and be able to get out. The question is, if you're taking their ship or if you're stopping the geologic disaster also, that would be separate from what you're doing. You have the ability to come and go without being seen.
We'll get to that when we can.
Okay.
Yeah, that's a separate thing. This is I want to just erase our footprints.
Your footprints are clear. You're not going to get caught.
All right, so next is
going to be for the travel in and travel out.
Right.
What you do on site, that's a whole separate issue.
So now to Lieutenant Nilon to determine if we can, A, stop the geological eruption, or B, accelerate it to before the RDF satellite maneuvers their nuclear weapons into position.
Didn't we do that in reverse by delaying the ability for their satellite to be in range?
We didn't do that. We talked about that as was an option. We could try and kill it with a probe, but we need to know when the explosion will happen, if we can stop it. If not, can we make it happen before their satellite, if we choose to delay their satellite or whatever before it gets into position, can we set it off? And so it's just the volcanic eruption and not the volcanic plus nuclear disaster.
Okay. Lieutenant Nila, you have a task ahead of you.